Though I was hungry for a holy text, I grew up in the Episcopal Church, and as a child, I had a child's understanding of what was going on in church. For instance, I remember singing this little song for children about this person, Jesus, who took away my sin, and I remember feeling how scared I was and upset and bewildered. I had no idea who Jesus was. I had no idea what sin was. All I know is someone had taken something from me, and I had no idea how I was going to get it back. But as I grew to understand what the canon was and what I was being taught, I drifted away from the church and drifted into adulthood, as many people do. With a vague sense of maybe there's a God out there, maybe not. And a haunting sense that maybe there isn't anything out there. That maybe the traditional science is right. That it's something, this is a place where we just have to figure out how to make meaning out of a meaningless universe. And then I found myself in a theater with about 200 people or so, listening to Brian Swim, a mathematical cosmologist, and Sister Miriam McGillis, a Catholic nun, who were telling a new story that was informed a lot by Thomas Berry's work in The Dream of the Earth, telling of a universe that they were saying, wait a minute, no, there's something more here. This is a universe that is acting very intelligently, very creatively. And I remember being thrilled by this and feeling like, God, this is wonderful. My God, how wonderful this is. I want more of this. But I found myself wanting even more than just the scientific facts and the nonfiction narratives that were offered. I found myself missing the lyricism of the liturgy and the sound and the cadence of the scripture that I grew up with in the Episcopalian Church. The sound of the King James Bible. I wanted the story told that way. I wanted the science told that way. So, as audacious as it sounds, I was somehow given the assignment or took on the assignment of taking these words and taking these ideas and coming up with a story of creation. And what happened was it came through in a dialogue between a seeker and a sage. And the sage starts the whole dialogue with going back 13.8 billion years to the beginning of the universe. And this is the story that the sage tells. The infinite and the creation of the cosmos. It was the beginning of all beginnings. It was a time of no time, for time did not exist. A place of no place, for space did not exist. It was a beginning like no other, for there was no before. There was no time, there was no place. There was only the infinite and the unfathomable mystery. And the unfathomable mystery was all that was to be. And all that was to be was small, smaller than the tiniest particle in the tiniest atom, in the tiniest dream. Although, there was nowhere from which to see how small all that was to be was. For there was no outside and no inside. No here and no there. No now and no then. No darkness and no light. There was nothing save a whisper of what might be. An infinitesimal, indescribable, unfathomable mystery. And out of the unfathomable mystery, the infinite called forth to itself. It called forth space. It called forth time. It called forth being. And in that ecstatic instance, the universe exploded outward into existence with a jubilant and breathtaking beauty, brightness, energy, violence, and power and glory of a trillion newborn stars. It was a perfect explosion. 1 trillionth of a second slower, and the universe would collapse back into itself, unfulfilled. 1 trillionth of a second faster, And the universe would spin out, dissipating into nothingness, never to create galaxies, stars, planets, life, nor us. A perfect explosion. And in the instance of this perfect explosion, the infinite began a brilliant and fierce cycle of gloriously creating, violently destroying, and gloriously creating once more, as if it knew what it was doing. So this was the story that came to me. And the sage continues the story through the creation of the galaxies, the stars, the second generation stars that beget planets, the creation of Earth, the web of life, and the emergence of humanity on Earth. And then the sage tells the story of the emergence of humanity through the story of ancient mind, and the story of modern mind, and the story of planetary mind. Ancient mind coming forth about 50 to 100,000 years ago, when we got really good at language and started telling ourselves stories. And we told ourselves a story of connection, of deep connection, as we merged out of Africa and migrated across the continents. We created 10,000 stories, 10,000 languages, 10,000 stories of creation. Some more violent, some more peaceful, but they all, nearly all, had a story of connection, deep connection with the web of life. But then about 10,000 years ago, modern mind came along. Modern mind emerged with the creation of systemic agriculture, and we started creating hierarchical societies. We started creating chiefdoms, nation states, and we started telling ourselves a story of separation, that we are separate from creation, that we are separate from each other, that we are separate from the universe. And then the sage talks about what is now emerging in the past couple of generations, the story of planetary mind. And I want to read a little bit from this story. The creative force of the infinite flows throughout and embraces the universe, whole and complete, ever-changing, ever-creative, and ever-destructive. As the infinite plays and dances, as it seizes catastrophe to create anew, as it yearns for ever-greater order, ever-greater complexity, ever-greater consciousness, and ever-greater elegance, as it drives itself toward life. We are thus made in the likeness of the infinite. We are this creative force of the infinite, manifest in the form of a human being. And there's more to the story, and I want to stop there because there's a particular piece that came to me as I thought about the theme of letting go. As the infinite seizes catastrophe to create anew. And what I like to do is I want to go back to the emergence of the web of life, to a piece that talks about this. About 3 or 4 billion years ago, we as life, and I include us as life because we're part of a large continuum, much bigger than our small ego you. We are part of this larger project that emerged 3 or 4 billion years ago. And there was a famine when the bacteria, or more poetically, the little beings ran out of food on Earth. And it was a problem, a famine, until one of these beings figured out how to take starlight energy from the sun to strip apart water and air and to create a new source of food from that process, the process of photosynthesis. And what I want to do is I want to jump into the story at this point here. Yet once again, catastrophe. For as the beings who seized starlight to strip apart water and air became stronger and multiplied, they gave off oxygen, a vile and poisonous fire that slowly spread and turned the color of the sky an ominous, deadly blue. For this oxygen, this poison destroyed the waste of one that might have been food for others, rendered inedible the flesh of Earth, even penetrated the beings and killed them. Oxygen wrought havoc across Earth. It destroyed swarms of the tiny beings, their food, and their colonies of life. What happened at that point, according to James Lovelock, one of the co-founders of the Gaia hypothesis, along with Lynn Margulis, he said the oxygen catastrophe it came that close to wiping out life on Earth. Life created catastrophic conditions for itself to the point where we couldn't know whether or not it would be able to continue. And does that sound familiar to anyone today as we look at the social and ecological and spiritual crises that we face? There's a part of me that wonders that perhaps another thing is happening here. Instead of becoming afraid, becoming anxious, becoming depressed even at what is going on in the world, is it possible that the universe knows what it's doing somehow? Without that evolutionary catastrophe 3.5 billion years ago, we would not have had the multicellular creature. We would not have had land, plants, and animals. We would not be in this room talking today without almost losing everything. So I try and take that in those harder times, which always come. They will come. But I remember that the universe knows what it's doing. Catastrophe begat creativity. Competition begat cooperation. The curse of oxygen became a blessing. All the tiny beings once again prospered and multiplied, filling the oceans of Earth. And the blue of the sky transformed from the color of death into the color of life. So this is what letting go of my story of I have to know how it's going to turn out. Oh, the world it doesn't look like things are going well. Look at what we're doing to the landscape. Look at what we're doing to each other. But behind that, when I step back and look at a larger picture, perhaps we're creating for ourselves that one precise possibility that allows evolution to take us to heights we could never imagine as a community of life. Another theme of letting go. There's a particular piece in this book that talks about, are we really small and insignificant? And that is one of the stories that I was given from the scientific story, that it's just we're just so small, we're insignificant. And yet the universe couldn't be 1 millimeter smaller and contain us. We would be too big. So what I'd like to do is ask Sylvine to come up and join me in this last piece.